You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded, Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
Welcome to another edition of the Community Living Show, all here on the NCRA Radio Networks, the National Campus and Community Radio Associate Networks throughout Canada. And again, you're tuned into the Community Living Show on two of the Vancouver radio stations. Co-op Radio CFRO 100.5 FM, that's our half-hour show on Fridays from 2 to 2:30 p.m. And on CITR 101.9 FM on Thursdays from 9 o'clock till 10. And I've got Michael on the line. Hello, Michael.
Hey, Kelly.
How are you?
How's everything?
Okay.
Yeah.
I can't hardly hear you. I've got the headphones on the other side. I'm going to have to remove the outlet here. Hang on a moment.
Okay.
All right, so, yeah, that's good. That's better.
Is that better?
Yeah, a little better. All right. Okay. All right, so, I don't know where to begin. We don't even have any hosts.
What's that?
We don't have any guests on today.
No guests today, unfortunately.
No.
But you did say something about having Madeline on, right?
Oh, yeah, the election coverage on Vancouver Colchina.
Yeah,
that's still in the process. I'm hoping to have that later on in April or so.
Okay. We had Jenny Sims on.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that there's supposed to be a rally, I guess, April 9th with John Horgan, and maybe we can record some of what he's saying and report that after his rally there.
Yeah, that sounds good. I don't have my own recordable device for it. I'm hoping that in the near future I will get my own personal recording device.
Yeah.
Soon.
so that should be pretty cool in April. But you're saying something happened yesterday.
Well, I don't know if I want to say this to, I mean, she is part of my friend. She is part of all part of Spectrum and everything. But maybe I'll just give a big shout out to her anyways. She's probably in her 20s now, close to her. I'm close to my 40s. She's close to her. Close to her 30s too, so big shout out to Holly, one of my friends over there. Sad to see her. Just bumped into her at McDonald's, but I bumped into her twice because I was over at the ministry fixing my paid work position that I'm supposed to do. And I'm supposed to give the ministry, you know, my payment and everything. So it's all part of the benefits, right?
Right.
So anyways, she was a mess. I mean, she was by the time I was at McDonald's, she was sad. She was pretty tired. Looks of her face was like real pale and stuff. But it was, I and then again, I don't normally talk about sad stuff because it makes me feel sad. You know that?
Right.
It makes everybody feel sad along with it. And I don't try and talk it over to the radio a few times because it is, I could go on and on and on onto the show, onto it. But I just wanted to give a big shout out to her as well because she is struggling. And there are times where she doesn't have part of the ministry, the support workers helping her. And probably part of it, she has some sort of a different kind of like mental health or something like that, that I don't understand partly. So,
yeah.
So, I mean, that's real life out there.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, giving her a shout out, maybe that there's other people that they can help her out or something. So, you know.
Yeah. And there are a few times where, I think it was a few years ago when we used to be at, when Co-op Radio used to be on Columbia and Hastings, right?
Mm-hmm.
One time I was outside, I was finishing my show around after 2 o'clock, and she was there on the corner, you know, similar to the situation with McDonald's, you know, begging for money, begging for stuff, you know, and that kind of thing. And of course, those are the people that don't want to, you know, get a job like I do, or get support like I do. So it's totally different from that matter. But again, it makes me feel sad. And there are times where I don't want to feel sad all the time. It's just, I don't want to make people feel sad about this.
No, you know. Sometimes we have to talk about it, but you know, it's way more interesting. Sometimes it's more interesting to talk about some of the good stuff that's going on, you know. So
but again, like maybe I said it at the top of the show, we just you know, we should be talking about some of the struggling issues.
Yeah,
on this show.
Well, on a good note to this, our friend Cheryl Young with the Fibromyalgia Wellspring, they're taking steps to building housing for people who would become homeless, you know.
Right.
They have support and things like that. Mm. I hope Polly finds that place is comfortable for her to live in and find that support too, right?
Yeah. Well, it's almost similar to what I do at Dominican Republic there, and then in Cambodia, same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Similar to what I do for the Habitat.
Yeah.
Helping stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Well, anyways, since we don't have any more discussions, I picked up a province newspaper, and most of them is just the same old news that we normally see on yesterday's news that's happened in Vancouver, happening in British Columbia, happening around the world.
They're still doing a lot of it. To talk about the working poor and stuff like that,
mm-hmm.
You know, and you know, in that's also some of that's also why we do what we do, you know, with advocacy for because some of those people they may be they're working poor, but one of the couples that they reported on that was the wife had some kind of an accident or something like that, and she was disabled.
Mm-hmm.
And they were going to cut her benefits because her husband was making too much money.
Right.
but they weren't getting their bills paid. So I don't understand how that works. How do you say that somebody's making too much money for benefit, but they can't pay their bills? That doesn't make sense.
It's pretty much the same thing when I go to work part-time, and if the money that I earn from my work goes up, my benefits almost feels like it's cut off. So,
yeah.
So
I mean, it shouldn't be like that, you know.
Right.
There should be a way for everybody to thrive in our society, right?
Right.
But that was, I saw some articles about that in the province and in the Sun.
Right.
I guess they're doing a series on that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So
you don't have the car, and I was just wondering, I know you do morning papers. I'm just wondering how did that go out through?
Well, we had to load my papers in my wife Mary's papers all in the same car and do them, and because the car I usually drive isn't running,
right?
So we had to do them all in Mary's car, and she has to, before I can get to the radio show and get back, she's got to be to work. So
right,
but we should have it back. We should have the other car back shortly, so
all right.
Probably by next week we'll have it back.
Okay.
So, yeah. But,
all right, Michael. Well, it was good talking to you. I've got a Autism Live on right now.
Okay.
All set and ready to go.
All right.
This one's from yesterday. It's about 55 minutes, and again, we're not going to play all of it. And probably most of it I have to save my voice because my voice is a little bit harsh from, I don't know, starting from a bad cold or something.
Yeah.
So we'll leave you with Autism Live. And, of course, Autism Live is a production of Center for Autism and Related Disorders, which is known as CARD. It's headquartered at Woodland Hills, California, but their offices are around the globe. You can find out more information, www.centerforautism.com. You can also go online, autism-life.com. Okay, Michael, thank you very much for
talk to you later.
Talk about some brief news and stuff. So we'll talk again next week.
Okay, bye.
See ya. All right, so that was Michael Brumman, who's, of course, phoned us in White Rock, talked about some info and stuff. So I'm going to play you as Dr. Doreen Ripache that they've done yesterday, so March 29th of 2017. So, I mean, it's 2 hours of the live broadcast. So, again, if you want to go join the conversation or if you want to do our DARE free newsletter, go to www.autism-life.com. Here we go.
Welcome to Ask Dr. Doreen. We're so lucky because we have with us right now Dr. Doreen Grampiche. She is a true expert in the field of autism, having worked in this field for more than 30 years. She's a remarkable human being and a service to our community because really, beyond being an expert, and I believe the preeminent expert in autism, she's also a visionary. She is so kind and compassionate and interested in what our community needs and takes a look at all the things that are happening and helps us to be prepared because changes have come and changes are still coming. So we salute you and thank you for
being
here.
Good morning.
It's
always a pleasure to be here.
Well, it's our thrill always. We do like to always remind everybody though that there is no expert in any field that could give individual specific advice in this format. So what that means is that you'll write in your question and have an opportunity to hear from Dr. Grampiche about some ideas that she has on that general topic. And what it will do is help you. We've heard from, in fact, we have a comment today from a viewer about some advice that you gave that proved to be very helpful. We hear all the time because you help us to think of things in a different way, to be able to advocate for ourselves, to know what question to ask when we go see an expert who actually That's has great. Eyes on the situation, which is what's needed for an individual specific advice.
That's great.
So just know that that's what this hour is about, but it's just so enlightening always. In fact, maybe we should jump right to that. The parent who wrote in said, "Hi, Shannon and Dr. Doreen, thank you for the headset recommendation for working on thunder. It came in handy when our smoke alarm went off in the middle of the night. Instead of freaking out, he helped himself to his headset and walked out of the room to find what was going on.
Oh my gosh.
And even offered to help turn off that false alarm.
I love it.
Answers you give to all the questions are so helpful, and thank you so much, ladies." And that comes from our fabulous, we refer to her as the haircut mom.
That's awesome.
We have, since, you know, we want to preserve people's anonymity always, we have some viewers that we have pet names for. We have haircut mom, we have strawberry mom, we West Virginia mom.
Absolutely.
They're all good friends of ours at this point. So in any case, I'm thrilled that that's what happened. And
that's just so cool.
Another example of how you shed light on things that are so helpful.
No, that's so great. It's just remembering that our kids actually have a really hard time with sensory input. You know, that's really important. But how awesome. What a great young man.
Yes, what an amazing thing. And also, you know, can I just say that sometimes as a parent, it just seems that the problem that your child is having, especially when it's sensory in nature, it seems so unknown, so foreign, so overwhelming, and you think, oh, you know, this is just how it is, and what will become of all of us?
Yeah.
And you give us something to do that it's like, oh, well, gosh, that works.
Right. Well, because, you know, like a lot of times I think to myself, like, how does it feel to actually experience autism? And it's funny, a couple of days ago, my daughter, this is the first year that any of my children are in a public school, so I didn't know that they do this in public school, but I just found out that they have this thing called every 15 minutes. Do you know about every 15
minutes? No.
Okay, so it's for 11th and 12th graders only, and they do a full-on replication of what happens every 15 minutes is someone dies from a car from a drunk driving accident. So they do a full-on replication that is pre-planned with a bunch of kids. So a certain of their classmates are planned to be the victims. And what they do is every 15 minutes during the morning hours, they will announce that so-and-so died in a car accident. And it goes on until there's like 20 of them or something.
Wow.
And then in the afternoon, they will do a full reenactment. The police are involved, the hospitals are involved, so the police will actually bring out, I couldn't believe it, Charlie taped all this, they bring out cars that are smashed, you know, and there's like the students with paint and everything are hanging out of it. It's like, it's really brutal, right? And police comes, takes the driver, does a test, then takes the driver, then ambulance comes and takes the others, and like it's a really, and they actually have a funeral. The parents of the kids come and speak at the funeral. Like it's something you will never forget. Like when she was showing it to me, I was thinking to myself, first of all, I'll never forget that. You know, it's great for 11th and 12th year olds because the 12th graders, because they're just driving, they're just starting to drive,
and to bring that reality to
them, right?
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, you know, and unfortunately, I just found out about this, but there's not enough time this year. But you know, every year for Autism Awareness Month, April, we do a bunch of stuff. This year, we've partnered up with Chuck E. Cheese, of course, and they're doing sensory friendly Chuck E. Cheese days, which is great, and then we're also doing training for first responders, and then we're going to schools and doing anti-bullying training. And along that line, because that's, to me, that's a really, really important one. It happens a lot. It's not even intentional bullying. I think it's just that other kids really, and I see this with all my kids' friends and all the kids that have grown up in my house, they just don't know enough about autism, so they don't know how to approach it, you know. So when they see someone who's autistic, they will avoid, right? And that's the worst. I mean, that's the last thing we want for our kids. We want them to engage, right? So I was thinking of this concept and thinking, how can we do it for autism? What can we do for people to experience what autism is, really? And the first thing that came to mind was sensory input, right? Because there's nothing you can really, honestly, if you take anyone, it's funny because this also happens to individuals with schizophrenia, but you take anyone and you give them really high sounds that are very disturbing, and you also give them skewed vision, like let's say, prism glasses or something, right. And you tell them they're not allowed to talk. For the course of a day or an hour, they will experience a very, very small portion of what our kids go through every single day. And with that, it'll help them understand why our kids behave the way they do, why it's so hard for our kids to interact socially.
Yeah.
And I was I feel like we need to do something to help other kids understand what autism, the experience of autism is like.
Yeah.
So that they'll never, so that first of all, they become more comfortable, familiar with it.
Yeah.
And also so they can help. This young man, great. I had a child who in school would, every hour he would be terrified because he knew the bell is coming.
Yeah.
At the end of the hour. Like, imagine if the school was just smart enough to like allow him to have headphones, you know?
Exactly. A small little tweak of a thing.
Something.
That unless you, I think about Temple Grandin when the whole Fukushima nuclear power plant happened. And Temple said, you know what, if a person with autism had been in charge of building, that would never have happened.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have a different view of things and people can't see things the way we do. Sometimes that's of a benefit to them.
Absolutely.
Other times it is not.
That's right.
And it really is incumbent upon those of us who don't have autism to try to take a perspective of somebody who is on the spectrum. But I think you're really onto something to be. I know as a mom, all I wanted when Jem was little was to crawl inside his head and see the world he did. If I could just do that, I would have paid whatever there was. There wasn't much, but I would have paid all the shekels that I had because I wanted to see it from his point of view.
Right.
I love that he can tell me now some things.
Right.
If I figure out the right question to ask, it's so freeing. So to be able to experience
Absolutely.
That. They also have now men can experience labor. They have a whole suit that they can put on.
Right,
because I think
that's so
you
cool.
can be compassionate, but until you have felt it,
then
you go, oh, I get it now.
Yeah, absolutely.
What a wonderful thing.
I just hope that if we do something like this next year, like experiencing autism, something like that, that it doesn't come across as offensive to individuals who are actually affected by autism, you know, because there's no way you can replicate it, but you could, just the sensory aspects of it, you might be able to replicate, and the fact that the vast majority of the individuals have a difficult time expressive communication. So, those are the only things you can really replicate. You can't really have someone experience what it's like, but it's something close to it.
Love it. Absolutely love it. All right, we're going to take a short break, and then we are going to be back with more Ask Dr. Doreen after these messages.
All right, so you're tuned into the Community Living Show on the NCRA Radio Networks. I'm, of course, Kelly Rayburn onto the show, so we will be back with more more people, well, I wouldn't say more people, but more episodes on Ask Dr. Doreen in just a few moments. So, and we'll be back in a moment. The Global Accessibility Awareness Day is on the third Thursday of May of every year. The community and campus stations across Canada are hosting inclusive radio about accessibility, self-advocacy, adapted technology, and more. Contact your local stations to find out more.
That is a sigh of relief, because Fundrive 2017 is officially over. To everyone who donated their time, energy, money, forgot to donate now but will donate online at citr.ca, couldn't donate this year but will donate in the future, and to our community as a whole, CITR and Discorder want to say thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Just like thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for trusting us with your money, and we promise to make good use of it.
Muchas gracias. Gracias, gracias.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Merci, genre infiniment.
Thank you, everybody. That was great.
UBC Rec is everything that is recreation on campus.
No matter how you play, UBC Rec is your resource for fun activities. This student program is operated by over 140 volunteers, and it is the largest intramural recreation organization in Canada. Programs cover fitness, instructional classes, outdoor recreation, drop-in sports, special events, small tournaments, and intramural leagues. All the registration information is available in the Student Recreation Center or online at rec.ubc.ca. UBC Rec, how do you play?
You're tuning in to Community Living Show on the NCRA Radio Networks. That's National Campus and Community Radio Association of Broadcasters throughout Canada and throughout British Columbia. And this is the Community Living Show on two of our stations, Co-op Radio, CFRO, and CITR. We were continuing on to Ask Dr. Doreen. Here is the conclusion of Ask Dr. Doreen for the half-hour program.
Welcome back to Autism Live and to Ask Dr. Doreen. Now, you know that you can write in your questions, and I love to pick questions from you, and we're going to do more of your questions in just a minute. But I had a question for Dr. Grampuchet this morning. Like all of you, I've been watching the news in the last 24 hours and have seen the story of the 13-year-old in the Dallas-Fort Worth airport who he had left his backpack in his knapsack, and I think that's part
his
of the reason
computer.
Why he was, that's what I mean,
his
yes, computer.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of the reason why he was singled out. But it escalated into him having to have a full pat-down search. 13 years old, has sensory processing disorder. Mom was understandably very upset, videotaped it. It's all over the news right now. And even this morning on the Today Show, they were interviewing the young man, and he was saying how confusing it was to him mm-hmm. that he's always been told, you know, you don't let people touch you there. And here you are standing in a public place and having this happen. And, you know, I will say we need our airports to be safe. I mean, of course, that's a priority. And I'm sure that that official was not loving that he was having to do this in front of the world either. But it really brought home for me as the mother of a young man. I've been in that airport mm-hmm, before mm-hmm. and had them want to send my very tall 13-year-old, he was 12 then, through the one
body more, scanner.
The body scanner that
which
none
is
of us
pure x-ray.
Yeah, which none of us particularly would choose for our kids, right? And I kind of was balking yep. at it and saying, you know, I don't want him to do that. Can't we do mm-hmm. something else? And this woman got in my face and said, oh, we'll give him a pat down, you know, and it'll be the most thorough pat down. And I went, no, send him through the scanner. But it concerns me. And this morning, I said to Jem, I want you to watch this. I want you to see this videotape. This young man didn't do anything wrong, but this could happen. I would certainly advocate for it not to happen to you, but... And I drove to work thinking, I really wanted to ask you about this because... I think we need to prepare our kids for these kinds of things. And how? How do you prepare
you know,
them?
It, I mean, it's easy. The how is not as, it's very easy if we could predict all the possible situations that could happen. And that's the problem. The problem, I think, is not that, you know, yes, we have to prepare our kids and perhaps we just tell them that there will be situations where this type of thing happens. But really, if you really want to prepare them, then you have to kind of make assumptions about various environments and procedures that could potentially go this way. Okay. You know, the problem here is there's not, I mean, and I'm certain this is the issue, there's not enough training provided to our TSA folks, right? So they're told a certain set of black and white rules. There's no question about it. I mean, sometimes I see this even at CARD now that we're like 3,000 employees. You make a rule that's intended to safeguard our clients or something like that, and someone goes over and beyond and like just really doesn't look at the gray and is very black and white about right. it and says, no, we never can do this, you know? Yeah. And it's like, no, actually, in this particular situation, you can make an exception. Yeah. You know, one of the...
Well, for the folks that are listening to us on half an hour, I'm sorry, we have to leave you as that for now, but you can always check them out, www.autism-life.com. And for more information. That is it for the half-hour show of our show. We will be back for other stations. We will be back with station ID. But for the rest of you, thank you very much for listening. We will be back again next week.
You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
And of course, you're listening to us on the Full Hour Show, on Community Living Show, on the National Campus and Community Radio Association networks, on the national side of things. And of course, we're also on the provincial side too as well. And of course, you're listening to the Community Living Show. I'm Kelly Rayburn. We're talking about on the issues of autism life, and Ask Dr. Doreen is on the show. CARD CEO and veteran, autism visionary Dr. Doreen Grandpiche answers your questions from yesterday of March 29th. Excuse me. And then, of course, you can check them out, woowoowoo.autismlive.com, and you can join their email list as well. They're all part of centerforautism.com. That's in Woodland Hills in California, but their offices are around the globe. So that's all the information I have. So here we go. Back to the Ask Dr. Doreen.
Really, if you really want to prepare them, then you have to kind of make assumptions about various environments and procedures that could potentially go this way. Okay. You know, the problem here is there's not, I mean, and I'm certain this is the issue, there's not enough training provided to our TSA folks, right? So they're told a certain set of black and white rules. There's no question about it. I mean, sometimes I see this even at CARD now that we're like 3,000 employees. You make a rule that's intended to safeguard our clients or something like that, and someone goes over and beyond and like just really doesn't look at the gray and is very black and white about it and says, no, we never can do this, you know? Yeah. And it's like, no, actually, in this particular situation, you can make an exception. Yeah. You know, an example is, for instance, we tell our folks you can't use your cell phones.
Right.
Right? Because we don't want our employees using their personal cell phones. And there was a situation where a parent had a child with seizures and had sent, or epilepsy or diabetes, I don't remember, it was some medical issue, and had sent the child to our center and then wanted a phone number to be able to call to remind them of something. And nobody would give her the cell phone number, you know? And I was thinking, like, you guys, this is an exception, you know?
Right.
And the same thing is happening here, I think, is that perhaps, and of course, depending on the functional level of the child, like the parent doesn't want to say, oh, he has autism, maybe,
right,
or something to single him out even more.
Right.
And even if the parent did say that, I'm not sure the TSA agents would even know that there's a sensory component.
Right.
That maybe it's not comfortable for this individual for us to pat him down like this. And,
yeah, and she did say that she was trying to tell them that. But when you're in that moment, I know when you're in that moment, I think they've been trained to, you know, people say everything under the sun, so they're not really listening.
They don't, okay, so this takes me for a moment, I mean, and this is my personal opinion,
yeah.
Because I also often observe TSA and how they treat people, and they don't like it. So my personal opinion is that when you put on, there's this very famous study in psychology called the Zimbardo Prison Study. I don't know if you've heard of it.
Yes.
Zimbardo Prison Study was done at Stanford. It's a very cool study, actually, where he basically took a bunch of friends. They were friends in high school, like they were in college, and they were friends. And he just randomly split them in half, and half of the people became prisoners, and half of the people became guards. And this the study, it was an actual study, and it was in the locker area that underneath of Stanford University. And it became the relationship, the way the guards treated the prisoners, their own friends, over the course of, I think, 2.5 weeks, became so bad that they had to discontinue the study. It was supposed to go for 6 weeks. they literally had to discontinue because they were becoming extremely abusive.
Yeah.
Movies have been made about this experiment.
Yeah, it's the thing that proves that absolute power corrupts absolutely.
Exactly, exactly. And just a uniform has a huge amount. There's a ton of studies showing the effects of just wearing a uniform. And it has such an incredible dominant effect. And the TSA are, generally speaking, I don't think there's a requirement for any kind of higher education to become TSA. And you are in a uniform and you absolutely have a lot of power at that moment because of the fact that your job is to ensure the safety. So there's not a whole lot of information that goes into like how you should treat people with different disabilities or the elderly or young or mothers traveling with five kids or, you know, none of that is ever said to anyone. And these are not individuals who will figure that out. So often you see this kind of behavior just because there are some TSA folks that are just rude. They're plain rude. And it's because of that uniform. I'm pretty sure if you sat next to that individual in church on the weekend, they would be a different person.
Right,
you know what
right.
I mean? In that uniform, they become highly assertive and aggressive. So how do you prepare your child? I mean, the same way I think that's why we're focused on teaching. In fact, thank you for bringing this up because first responders, TSA,
yes,
should be in that group.
I was just going to say, I would be happy to reach out and see if I can find somebody and say, let's work on some training. And this
yeah,
would be a
that
good
would
week
be amazing.
It.
We'd love to do that for the TSA all over the country because honestly, if we could just give them some feedback on how to handle this, I'm sure that they would respond to it. I just don't think they know. And for our kids, I think really the only lesson that we can give them in preparation is just to be a little bit cautious, to exercise caution around individuals with uniforms.
Okay.
While they are intended to protect us, they are also people who have a certain level of power.
Yes.
I mean, we all, you know, let's face it, it's like we all have a certain anxiety when a cop comes up to you or something like that. So, you know, I think we need to just teach our kids to like really pay very close attention to the individual in a uniform and see what they're saying.
Yeah. And even, you know, I just as you're talking about it, I'm thinking about the fact that when you first go up to TSA and you have to have your ID and everything out and they ask you a question.
Yeah.
That's like a screening question. And over the years, I've said to Jem, like, you have to have it together. You know?
Right.
Like,
right.
You have to have it together. Now he's old enough that he holds his own ID.
Right.
And I always, the first thing I say is, this is my son. He's whatever his age is. Because he's always looked much older.
Right.
And I don't say anything else and look to see how he does. When Jem was littler, when they would ask him a question, sometimes it would take him a while to answer and he wouldn't necessarily make eye contact. And then I would get tense thinking, oh, you know, which is not all of that reading to that TSA agent is not the best thing. Now I always remind him as we're going up, make sure you follow all the rules, make sure you make eye contact, make sure you answer them when they talk to you. And
I think a parent, if you have a child who has a little, you know, is more disabled because of autism, you should tell the TSA agent.
I agree.
I really do think that it's important to tell them because aside from the fact that I never really want to label our kids, I just do think that it produces a little bit more caution on their part in terms of how they deal with your child.
Absolutely. I've even heard of one parent who called the airport ahead of time and said, I'm coming. My child has autism and, you know, so we're going to be coming through the TSA. And what happened was that they made sure that there was a supervisor there at that time.
That's great.
I think that is a great, in that circumstance, I don't think you're always going to be met with great stuff.
Here's the other thing. You can absolutely call the airline and request assistance getting through.
Great.
You definitely can do, and it's their job. They will provide it, just like they provide a wheelchair.
Okay.
They will provide an individual who will go with you and will actually walk through and will then assist and kind of make sure nobody treats you poorly.
Okay, great, great. Good to know. All right, we're going to take a break, and then we're going to be back with more of your questions, I promise. Stick with us.
And, of course, you're listening to the Community Living Show on the NCRE Radio Networks. I'm Kelly Rayburn. We're on the full hour show on flagship station CITR 101.9 FM and streaming online at CITR.ca. We are going to be taking a break as well, so we will be back with more. Ask Dr. Doreen. We're not going to play all of it, but you can go to their website, www.autism-life.com, and you can always check out their broadcast, their podcasts and everything for their yesterday's 2 hours. And of course, they'll do it today at 2 hours. The full segment for 2 hours today as well. So stick around. We'll be right back in just a moment. The Global Accessibility Awareness Day is on the third Thursday of May of every year. The community and campus stations across Canada are hosting inclusive radio about accessibility, self-advocacy, adapted technology, and more. Contact your local stations to find out more.
Become a CITR member and make some new friends.
Members get discounts in Kitsilano and around UBC at The Book Warehouse, Stormcrow Ale House, The Australian Boot Company, Fresh's Best Salsa and Company, Banyan Books and Sound, Tapestry Music Limited, Rufus Guitar Shop, Dentry's Irish Grill, the UBC Bookstore, On the French Hair Design, and the Bike Kitchen.
What would we do without our friends?
At Dunkin' Donuts, each and every
radio show
is brewed fresh and served fresh at the peak of its flavor. If you're a tough customer, only the taste of this
radio show
will do. So go ahead, let Dunkin' Donuts make your
radio experience
exquisite.
Indeed.
Dunkin' Donuts, serving sweet treats from the Pop Underground. Thursdays, noon to 1.
You're tuned in to the Community Living Show on the National Campus and Radio Association Networks. I'm, of course, Kelly, and actually, this is our, come to mention it, that this is our full hour show. On our show, we don't have a broadcast on Co-op Radio CFR 100.5 FM that's on for tomorrow, but normally we do, but this is our full hour show on our, on anything on disabilities, special needs, accessibilities, and so much more. You can also tune in at 2 o'clock p.m. on our Co-op Radio or on CITR station accessibility show that they do. All Access Pass, that's on at 2 o'clock. They've got some good shows on as well. DP is one of the main talented hosts that she does for the show, so give her a shout out to her. And so on with the Ask Dr. Doreen, Rick Grandiche, answering your questions on Autism Live. Again, if you want more information on Autism Live, you can go to the website www.autism-life.com and you can check out other podcasts as well. Here we go.
Welcome back to Autism Live and to Ask Dr. Doreen. We're here with Dr. Doreen Grampshay. I want to go to a question that somebody emailed me, and that's one of the other ways you can get a hold of us is you can email. If you've got a longer question in particular, you can email me. My email is s.penrod, P-E-N-R-O-D, at autism-live.com, and that's s as in Sam, dot Penrod. I know some of you are listening on iTunes, and it's hard to hear. What I'm saying, S as in Sam. All right. They wrote in and said, "Hi, Shannon. I'm a mom of two girls, one with autism. She's 3.5 years old. We're living in Australia. My question is, recently I came to know about ABA. I attended an ABA program three days through ABIA Center in Melbourne.
ABAI.
Do you think that's what it is, ABAI?
Well, ABAI...
the international program.
Yeah, I don't know.
I would assume ABAI, but it says ABIA. I don't know.
Yeah.
In Melbourne. Now we have found a program supervisor. Unfortunately, it's hard to find a private therapist. My program supervisor told me that the therapist and I do the program together. Can a parent alone do the ABA program intensively for 25 to 30 hours? Is it as effective as a therapist when they do it? At present, I'm doing 15 to 20 hours of therapy with my daughter.
Wow.
I have a supervisor who writes programs for me. Can I apply for Skills for Autism for more help? I'm a mom who could give 100% for my daughter, just struggling to get a good, intensive, structured ABA program. Please help me, she writes. And I'm thrilled that you wrote in, because I think that Dr. Grampuche has some great information for you.
Okay.
No pressure.
No, not at all. It's just that, like, God bless you for doing so much with such limited resources. I rereading it as you read it. So I think what has happened for this mom is that this program in Melbourne has given her 3 days of training, and then you're on your own, is what I think. Because she says, I attended the ABA program 3 days through ABA Center in Apple, and then found a supervisor. So I think what you, and I don't even know who your supervisor is or if they're board certified, most likely not. A lot of people in New Zealand haven't quite caught up yet. But what I would do, in Australia, this is Melbourne, okay. So what I would do is a couple of different things. First of all, the people I know are not in Melbourne, but what I would do is I would use all the solutions that we have, which I'm gonna tell you, Skills and IBT, and then I would definitely hire some family members, neighbors, high school kids, people who just want to help. Because no, I don't think you'll last too long if you're the sole therapist. I'm trying to think. I don't think I could do myself 20 hours a week of therapy with any of my kids. I don't think I would last. It's a lot. So I don't recommend it. I think you need to get other people involved. And what you do is you get a team of people together, and you know, they could be young, they could be kids, they could be high school kids, and as long as they're serious people and they want to help. And what you do is you will train them. The way to train them, I don't know what training this organization offers, and if you can put them through that, that might be helpful as well. But our training is on Institute for Behavioral Training, IBT, and the URL for it is ibehavioraltraining.com. iBehavioral, spelled the American way, not the Australian way, .com. And you will, on there, you'll see professional training, teacher training, parent training, and I would suggest that they go through the therapist track. In fact, if they're interested, they could take the board certified autism technician course series. It isn't a lot, it's 40 hours total, and it'll prepare them. And I recommend you do the same. I recommend that you definitely go through the BCAT package, board certified autism technician package, and that'll teach you more. And if you go to the parent tab or on IBT, there's a lot of very, very useful information there as well. So I think that these modules are very inexpensive. They're short. They're not huge. And we're not talking about a massive amount of, in a week, you'll get a lot of good training. So after that, and that could be ongoing, by the way, you don't need to do that first. You should do like the basic package first. But then you can continue to increase your knowledge as you treat your child, because you should, and that's going to be very helpful. Then the question becomes, what do you need to teach your child? You don't need a supervisor. The supervisor is the one that basically tells you the following, and I can tell you how to get that information. So if you're paying that supervisor, I'd rather you use that money to pay a therapist or a bunch of therapists. So what you do is you'll need to know exactly what your child's skills and deficits are, and you'll need to know how to improve on those. So that's skills. And yes, you should definitely go on the skills website, skillsforautism.com. And there you will first answer a bunch of questions about your child. So you sign up and you'll answer a whole bunch of questions. And after you answer all those questions of what your child can and cannot do, all the things that you said your child cannot do will go to kind of a big supermarket of lessons, of areas that need to be worked on. And then it'll give you options by domain, and you'll select and you'll say, okay, I'm going to do... Why 30 hours? She's 3 years old. If you can get a team of people together, if you can get a bunch of therapists or neighborhood kids or whatever, neighbors or friends or family members to help, I would put together a 40-hour program at least. And I would say, okay, her entire day is going to be packed with therapy. And you would make these sessions go about 2 hours each. So you'll do, let's say, 9 to 11, and then give her a break for half an hour, and then do like 11:30 till 1:30, during which time you can also work on feeding skills, teaching her to eat by herself politely and so on. And then you'll do another little break, and then you'll do another two-hour session. And realistically, you want to do at least 3 2-hour sessions a day, if you can, or two, and then go through the weekend as well. You really want to pack about 40 hours, if you can, into her life. And don't worry about academics right now. I wouldn't. I would use this young age to teach her all the skills she needs other than academics. So I would not be putting my child in school. I would be really just focusing on teaching. Now, if you can't fill her time, then that's when you want to put her in school, because we don't want the children to be unoccupied. You want her to be occupied. And then what you do is you just start selecting from these domains. And essentially, when your child is three, you're going to be focusing on the domain of on the curriculum area of language, social play, and adaptive. And depending on how much of her motor deficits are significant, usually our kids don't have a ton of motor deficits. So if you can ignore the motor curriculum, that will save you some time. On the other hand, if you see that your child has some visual issues or some sensory issues, then do look at the motor curriculum, because there's a sensory motor is in there as well. So that's how I would focus my time. And then you just go through and you select, like, let's say, if you're doing 40 hours and you're on five areas, I would pick like 3-4 language lessons, maybe one social, one play, maybe one or two adaptive. Obviously, she's three. I don't know if she's potty trained. You need to make sure she gets potty training, toilet training. That's very important. So you put all of that together to make a nice mix. And then what we can actually show you, like if you you can get someone from Skills to call and show you how to set up a lesson plan, like how the lesson plans work and how you write them, and we can show you how to take data. It's actually, there's a module on IBT about data collection and how you can take data with forms and everything. It'll help you get started. Another really good resource is our book that we published a couple of years ago, Evidence-Based Treatments for Autism, the CARD model. I would read that. With all of that together, in other words, instead of spending your time really doing the actual therapy, I would spend the time on teaching yourself a little bit more about ABA and how to design programs, so that you become the program supervisor, the manager of the program, and you tell the therapists what they need to do. If you get to a future point where it's just very difficult to know the next steps, there are other things. We have a telehealth process here at the CARD. You can definitely hire one of our supervisors, and they will get on like FaceTime with you, and they will actually see how you work with the child, with your child. They'll see how the therapists work with the child, will give feedback, will train more, will tell you how to do programming, what lessons to select, how to teach specific skills, how to move on. But Skills will tell you everything you need completely from age 3 all the way up to age 8. And hopefully during the course of 3 or 4 years, you're done, like, and your child's mastering things. And then ultimately you mainstream into school, and then the program stops. Or it fades out because the child is successful. So it's not. It sounds very overwhelming, but it is quite doable. And I would just suggest that you put a lot of your time more into learning rather than actually doing the stuff. Try to hire other people. Now, if financial is a big problem, then write back and we'll help you trouble solve that and figure out some other solutions.
Yeah, and I just want to say that you wouldn't be the first parent to do this and do this successfully.
Right.
One of the things that we show from time to time here on the show is the story of Maddie, the little girl who was diagnosed with autism, and her parents were living in a rural place mm-hmm. where they couldn't get access to anything. And so they were trying to come up with an ABA program on their own. It was right as Skills was coming out. They took the Skills program. They got the people from their church to volunteer their time. They trained all of them and using what is now the IBT training. And they were able to intensively intervene with their daughter. And she needs no additional services now. And other families have done it too. It's just we have video of Maddie, and that's why I bring her up.
Definitely.
And they've been an amazing, outspoken family of saying this is possible.
Right.
I love the fact that years ago, there was only one way to do this, right? And it was in the home, and
yeah.
you either had to have a funding source or you had to be independently wealthy.
Right.
And this is when I say every day that Dr. Grampuchet is a visionary. This is one of the many things that I'm talking about was that you said, and I was in the room when you once said this isn't okay. We have the tools. We need to make sure that people have access to
definitely,
the tools.
Definitely.
And you made that happen. You took, and people told you not to and said, this is your secret sauce, hide it. And you said, not happening. And made it so that it is possible for everyone to be able to have access.
Right.
Will it be harder? Yes. If you don't have a team of people, and especially I appreciate you saying, because I know we have had some parents that are doing 20 to 30 hours themselves without other support, and they would tell you it's really hard and that they really don't get as far in terms of generalization because mm-hmm. it's just them. You just by virtue of how generalization works, you have to have another person to be doing it with a child for them to really learn it.
Yes.
But we as parents come with baggage every time we come to our child because we also have to get them up and we have to get them cleaned and we have to feed them. And so
you have to also be the primary reinforcer.
Right.
I mean, let's face it, the role of mom is also to pick the child up when they're hurt, to cuddle, to help them sleep, to hold them when they have a tummy ache. You have to be the calming, soothing mother. So that is a little contrary to being also the person that makes the most demands.
Right.
So it just makes it very hard for parents.
And I think...
All right, so we got to leave it there for now, but you can go online to hear more on their podcast, www.autism.com. autism-live.com for their continuing podcasts. And of course, they will have a later show on later today. I don't know when they do it, but they do it today for sure. So check them out, www.autism-live.com. And of course, you could also check out centerforautism.com. They're always the Center of Autism and Related Disorders, are known as CARD. Of course, they're headed in Woodland Hills, but they have their offices around the globe. That is it for the Community Living Show. Thank you very much, Michael Rubin, for the first part of the beginning of the show, and we'll look forward to seeing you next week. Again, programmers note, we don't have Community Living Show on Co-op Radio for tomorrow. We don't have anybody who's doing it, so New to Dune is going to be doing the 2 o'clock show on throughout. So thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you again next week. Have a great day.
Just leave it behind. Sometimes I'd like to take a peppermint and a switchblade and a Cadillac and throw it all in a fire.
You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver.
Radio for crazy people and the elderly. Oh, yeah.
Situation.